Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Curzon Cinemas podcast. We are recording this episode in Wrocław in Poland because last night was the 29th European Film Awards ceremony here in the city, and we were lucky enough to be there. I'm Sam Howlett, and this week I'm joined by Jake Cunningham.
Hiya.
So, this is a European Film Awards special. So, over the next 40 minutes or so, we're going to go through each of the nominations last night, go through the nominees who eventually won, and just talk about what we thought of that, as well as having an interview with Best Screenwriter nominee Paul Laverty for his film I, Daniel Blake. Jake, what do you think of Wrocław?
I've been loving Wrocław, I've got to say. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it here. When we first arrived, we didn't really approach any of the centre of the city, and we very much came through the urban side of it. Lots of apartment buildings, very quite brutalist. Not against that, but I read this was a pretty old city, and I was a bit confused as to where we actually were going. But then we got here, like, after sort of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and eventually by the first afternoon we had a wander into the town, and it's really, really lovely, particularly at the time we're coming at Christmas. They've got a massive Christmas market going on in the middle of the city, and the best way to describe it is like a giant Bruges market square mixed with kind of post-war Berlin.
Yeah, I think that's right. There's kind of this complete mash of like old and new buildings like right next to each other.
Mm.
So it does look a bit strange sometimes, but I really like that.
Yeah, and it's the European Capital City of Culture this year. And this European Film Awards kind of marks the end of that. But when you're going around the city, you can completely feel that. And yeah. I think that's you can see that, feel that in the history of it as well. When you look at the buildings, that meshing of past and present as well, particularly the New Horizons cinema.
Yeah, that's
recently opened, yeah. which is really, really special.
So what we're doing here in Poland is we've been basically covering this weekend, the weekend of the European Film Awards, on behalf of Curzon Home Cinema. So a big thank you to them for asking us to come and do this for them. We've been to a few press conferences, done a few interviews, and then last night at the awards, we were on the red carpet, taking some pictures, doing a couple of interviews, and then we went into the press room where we watched a screening of the ceremony, and we live tweeted it on the Curzon Home Cinema Twitter account. What we've done is, me and Jake, we wrote down our predictions for each of the major categories, and we've also written down a wild card, so something we think might have happened.
Yeah, so we wrote these down yesterday afternoon before the awards. Neither of us know what the other has written down, but that what we do know is that there is a Thuringian sausage in it for the winner. This is actually a German sausage, not a Polish sausage, but it's something that we've both enjoyed this weekend. There's quite a few of them about, and they're quite lovely. And so we thought, you know, we've got to put something on the line, haven't we, for these? Because it's not just pride at stake.
It's sausage.
Exactly.
It's nice German sausage.
Exactly.
Right, so should we get straight into it?
Yeah, let's do
it. The first award. So the first award we're going to talk about is the People's Choice Award. Now, the English sponsor of the People's Choice Award is Curzon Home Cinema. So this is quite an important award. And the nominees for that are...
A Man Called Over, A War, Aphorim, Body, Fire at Sea, Julieta, Mustang, Spectre, The Danish Girl, The Lobster, The Brand New Testament, and The High Sun. Now there's some in there that I was not expecting to be seeing.
Yeah. A
film like Spectre or The Danish Girl. Initially, you either think they're films from last year or they're bigger productions than anything else on there. But they're very international films as well. When you look at when a James Bond film is always pretty globe-trotting, but Spectre is very much a European.
Yeah.
By that opening sequence in Mexico, there was a lot happening across Europe. There would have been a lot of production set up across the continent. And you've got other ones in there like The Lobster, which has got a phenomenal amount of funding from across Europe, the UK, Ireland, Greece, France, the Netherlands, like a proper co-production as well. And you've got smaller films that perhaps may have got nominations and interest last year. For instance, Mustang was actually at these awards last year after it had runs in film festivals. And so that's what would have put it up for nominations. But then it's come back in for the People's Choice Award, as that's when it's actually gone into cinemas over this year and people have gone to see it and the people have voted for it.
Right, so who did you predict then?
For the People's Choice Award, I predicted...
The Lobster?
The Lobster,
Interesting choice.
Yeah, I went for The Lobster for exactly what I just said, because out of all the films nominated, it was the one that was co-produced by the most number of countries.
Okay.
And I thought that would be like a nice collective effort to reward.
My prediction was...
Julieta!
Julieta.
Yeah, I think Julieta is a good choice as well, because it's been such a success.
Yeah, I think never underestimate the power of Almodovar's fans. And Julieta, it was... I don't know, it's England, but it was the highest grossing non-Bollywood foreign language film at the UK box office since 2012's Untouchable. So I just thought it's been huge across Europe. Almodovar is kind of probably the most popular European auteur at the moment.
Yeah, outside of Europe, he's a well-established name.
Yeah, so I thought he would have that. But we were both wrong for that one, because that went to Body.
Body, which I can't say I've seen.
No. So yeah, that was the first award. People's Choice Award went to Body.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next award was the first one to be voted for by the European Film Academy, the jury, and that was for Best European Screenwriter. And the nominations for that were Christian Mungiu for Graduation, Paul Laverty for I, Daniel Blake, who you'll be hearing from later on in the show, Emma Donoghue for Room, Maren Arda for Tony Erdmann, and Thomas Wasilewski for United States of Love.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one, particularly for Room, because I think this is a really interesting category, because unlike other awards ceremonies, the Academy Awards, for instance, in America, there is no line between adapted screenplay or original screenplay.
Mm.
It is just screenplay. So Emma Donoghue was the novel writer of Room and then has adapted her own book for the screen. Whereas you've got Tony Erdmann, that's
completely original. Yeah, I, Daniel Blake, completely original. So there's quite a diverse selection. So like Tony Erdmann, Maren Arda's based this quite personally about her father in many ways, I think. And then Paul Laverty has done a lot of research about other people's lives. So there's quite a distinct, different approaches to writing on display here. So who was your prediction?
My prediction for screenwriter was...
Maren Arda for Tony Erdmann.
Maren Arda, yeah.
My prediction was...
Oh, Paul Laverty.
Yeah.
And the winner was...
Maren Arda for Tony Erdmann.
That is 1 point to me.
That's 1 point to Jen.
Yeah, after watching Tony Erdmann, I couldn't imagine anyone else winning the award because it's so unlike anything that I'd seen before.
Yeah, I think before the ceremony started, I wasn't entirely sure how... I knew Tony Erdmann was incredibly popular, but I think before now it hadn't won many awards.
Yeah, because when it came out of Cannes, it was widely regarded by critics that should have been the winner.
Right. And it hadn't won those awards, so I thought maybe it was more of an audience film and a critics film rather than actually an awards film.
Mm. Well, I mean, it's not sort of lavishly made. It's quite slow. It never sort of shouts at you about how... clever or funny.
Yeah, it's also not particularly like a lot of, you expect a lot of European films, and I think a lot of the films last night were that kind of European art house aesthetic, which I wouldn't put Tony Erdmann in at all, actually.
No,
I think it's quite broad.
Yeah, it's very stylistically neutral, yeah. I think. But I would really love to read the screenplay for it because so much of Tony Erdmann comes from the gaps between the dialogue. And I would love to read how much was in the script and how much was just down to the chemistry and awareness between Maren Arda and her actors, because it felt so fresh and almost improvised, because you are constantly thinking as you're watching it, you've just got to be making this up.
Yeah.
So I'd really love to take a look at that. But it is a real achievement, and particularly for how long it is to keep you engaged. I think Maren Arda said in the Q&A yesterday that she was watching a lot of films to get a sense of structure. And so to keep a comedy drama just fresh for the best part of 3 hours and to keep you engaged in that is a real achievement.
Absolutely. And I have a feeling it may not be the last time you hear the words Tony Erdmann on this podcast. But next up, we have the award for European Documentary. And the nominees for that were 21 Times New York, A Family Affair, Fire at Sea, Mr. Gaga, S is for Stanley, and The Land of the Enlightened. Prediction, please, Jake.
My prediction for Best Documentary was...
Fire at Sea. My prediction was Fire at Sea.
Fire at Sea.
And the winner was Fire at Sea.
We smashed it. Yes. Well done.
Points all around.
Yeah. So you actually spoke to Gianfranco Rossi, on the director of the film, on this very podcast.
Yeah, a few months ago. Yeah, had a nice chat with him in London. A very interesting man. Very, very passionate about the subject matter of Fire at Sea. I think that there was a lot of talk last night about the state of Europe at the moment, and obviously 2016 has been an interesting year for Europe. And involved in that dialogue is the migrant crisis, and this is a film that tackles it. So I think that's what really spoke to the Academy, that a film is actually talking about it and showing what the reality is.
So I think a lot of the politics that people were talking about last night at the awards and over the last 12 months, occasionally people can feel quite distant from it, and they want to engage in the debate and they want to be part of it. But the thing with Fire at Sea is that it really takes you down to a ground level and you feel like you're actively engaging with it.
Yeah, definitely agreed. And this is a artificial eye release, so we're particularly proud of that, and really pleased that it's won. And it's available on Curzon Home Cinema, so please do check it out. I think it's one of the most important films of the year.
Yeah.
Next up, we have the there was quite a few sort of honorary awards last night, and one of the notable ones was the European Achievement in World Cinema Award, and that went to Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, I think it was a really great choice. When you actually look back on his career, he's balanced, particularly in the later part of his career, the cross between Hollywood and Europe. and even merging that completely together with a production like Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
And he seems quite humble. He seems very thankful for the opportunities that he's had. He's not po-faced about the Bond stuff. He really seemed thrilled to have
yeah.
it. Like, he really was excited about the award, and he seemed very grateful for it. And I thought that it was completely well deserved.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Pierce Brosnan kind of goes under the radar a bit these days, but I think, yeah, they did this kind of montage of all these films and did make me realise how much he's been in and how much impact he's had on the industry.
Yeah.
So that was a nice moment.
It was introduced as well by Suzanne Bier, who directed Brosnan in Love Is All You Need, the 2010 film, which also stars Trin Dearholm, who is up for the Best Actress Award for her performance in Thomas Vinterberg's The Commune. And that Love Is All You Need is on home cinema as part of the European Film Awards collection, if you do want to check that out, one of his recent European productions.
Okay, and we're about to hear from our interview with Paul Laverty, but first, let's just quickly go over some of the other awards that were handed out last night. So that was Best Animation went to My Life as a Zucchini. Anne Osterud and Janos Bileskov Janssen won Best Editing for The Commune, which Jake mentioned there is available on Curzon Home Cinema. Alice Normington won Best Production Design for Suffragette. And a film called Land of Mine went home with Costume, Hair and Makeup, and Best Cinematography. So that's very impressive. And then A Man Called Over won Best Comedy Award.
Yeah, there's a few films there that we haven't seen come over to England yet. But this event has really got me excited about them, particularly Land of Mine going home with all of those awards. Really want to be checking that out when I get the opportunity. And a really real surprise that I wasn't expecting to see was The Commune for Best Editing, because it is very understated. It is not a film that I necessarily would think, oh yeah, the editing in that is great. It's not like it's Mad Max Fury Road or something, and it's all about how many cuts are in there. It's the use of the cuts for dramatic purposes, and it's a very understated film. And like, you look at Vinterberg's previous film, Far From the Madding Crowd, which is quite a swelling, romantic, operatic piece, and The Commune is far different from that, and it's very intimate. And I think part of that is the rhythm of it that creates that dialogue between all these different characters. And for an editor, balancing a dinner table is an enormous task, because you've got to, that camera has been positioned in about 8 different places and they would have rehearsed who's looking at who and when, and it's a nightmare. And I think with The Commune, because the whole film is about 8 different people all in dialogue with each other, the editing on that is a real achievement.
So well deserved.
Yeah.
All right. Now we're going to hear from Paul Laverty, who was nominated this year for Best Screenwriter for I, Daniel Blake. Paul Laverty has been Ken Loach's go-to screenwriter for many years now, and they've got this really great partnership that even managed to pull Ken Loach out of retirement for I, Daniel Blake. And we sat down yesterday and had a chat with him. So Paul jumps right in here and he starts talking about his relationship with Ken Loach. So this is me talking to Paul Laverty.
Because we've known each other for so long, we're very close friends, we've got many other interests outside film, so it's very easy to work with him. And we've got very different jobs. You know, he directs, I write, but we meet in the middle as filmmakers. So we've got very different jobs, but our loyalty is to the project, and it's great to have a collaborator who's so tough, because he's a very demanding collaborator, but he's also a very generous one, because it's, you know, you've got to just imagine, you've got to imagine the story, you've got to imagine Daniel Blake. You know, there's one thing getting all the information, it's one thing doing all the research, it's one thing trying to figure out what it is, but after all that's, all you've done all the research, which is almost like journalistic work, then what you have to do is forget it. And then you've got to have Daniel Blake, and you've got to have Katie Morgan, you've got to have the families, you've got to have the delicacy and the intricacy and the subtlety of very, very precise human characters. So so what we usually do is, you know, we usually talk. I like to test an idea, so I put things down on paper. you know, and perhaps have several options. Then we try and decide what might be the strongest premise to a story. And then once we think about that, then I'll just go and write it. And then in the writing, it often changes. Yeah. And then after I write the whole thing, which I do in private, then we look at it and then we try to be our own toughest critics. You know, but with this one, Daniel Blake, you know, the first draft and what we filmed was, fortunately, was very close. But it was after, you know, a lot of time travelling the country, talking to people, talking, you know what the whistleblowers are? Whistleblowers, people inside the Department of Earth. I don't know if you've seen Hi, Daniel Blake. Have you seen?
Yes.
Oh, yes, I've seen it. So, you know, it was very important to get your head round the complexity of welfare law, which was very, very complex, but that's an abstraction. What you have to do is talk to people about their lived experience. And it's only by talking to them you say, ah, you're 3 hours on the phone. What's on the phone? Vivaldi. Well, that's driving crazy. You know what I mean? You know, things like that. And it's all those lived-in details that help you dramatise a bureaucracy. And what was very interesting too was speaking to whistleblowers inside the Department of Work and Pensions, because then you realise they had been bullied too. In fact, if they didn't carry out enough sanctions, enough penalties against people, which is a political decision, if, you know, what I found out that they were put on something called a personal improvement plan, a PIP, they call it. So in other words, if you weren't cruel enough and carried out enough sanctions, you would be put on a PIP. It's called a personal improvement plan. If you didn't carry out more sanctions, you were thrown out. And I actually met a whistleblower. I actually met someone who refused to do it. He was kicked out, lost his job, and ended up in a food bank, you know, just like Katie in the story. So it was very important to understand how workers were being bullied by their political masters as well. And then that gave us the capacity to have confidence to say, this isn't just a bureaucracy. This is actually systematic cruelty against some of our most vulnerable people. And they know that, you know? And it's very, very interesting because the film has led to an enormous debate in the UK. It's been mentioned about 7 times in Parliament. Damien Green is the minister in charge of it. And he's accused us of, he's called it fiction, as if that was enough to, I mean, it makes me laugh how crude they are, you know, as if Grapes of Wrath or Dickens wasn't fiction, you know, as if I'm not saying we're that level, but I'm saying is, you know, that telling stories can relate to a political and a truthful reality. So they're very, very crude about it. And of course, he hadn't seen it. So that made it all very, very funny. I mean, they really are not only crude, but they're stupid. And of course, as soon as they denied that we were exaggerating, of course, all the evidence just opened up and they were deluged by case after case after case of people whose lives were much, much worse than Daniel Blake or Katie Morgan. So it's led to a real big debate back home. And I think, you know, it's been very interesting too. I've been talking to people in Spain who have told me that they see this as a film of the crisis, they make it their own. And it's had a very good run in Italy and Spain. And I was speaking to people today from Greece, and I think they're suffering that in a more acute way. So it's funny, I think people, although they see something that's very British, I think what they do is they see parallels of working with bureaucracy and that fight for dignity that Daniel tries to have. And of course, it wasn't just all about state cruelty. There's also, hopefully in the film, a lot about, you know, solidarity and friendship, people looking after each other, you know, empathy. And so, anyway, that's what we tried to capture quite a lot in the film.
Did you have any idea that it was going to have that impact when you
were making it? Oh, no, you never know, really. I actually remember the day. It was very, very funny. You know that little bit at the end? You know, my...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
My name is Daniel Blake. You know, I'm not a number. I just remember being in a cafe one day and that just came to me. You know, and then I changed his name. You know, I had a different name, but I wanted a name that was kind of like existential, Daniel Blake, or something very English about it. I mean, because it was going to be filmed. I'm Scottish, but I like the name. And Daniel is an old biblical name, and it always feels to me like it's a name of kind of stubbornness and dignity. So I mean, I remember just changing the name, you know, I, Daniel Blake. And so it's very, very funny now. There's graffiti all over the place, you know. Moi, Daniel Blake, in different countries. Somebody saying there's demonstrations, you know, photographs of demonstrations in France. And it's on monuments, it's spray painted on all over the place. So it's, you've just got no idea when you're scribbling away, something might have this echo, really. You know, it's always, you never know with films, you just never know.
When you, before you wrote this film, Ken was retired, supposedly. Could you imagine anyone else making this script?
Well, I could imagine it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I suppose it would have been different, really. I mean, every filmmaker has got their own sensibility and strengths, and there's several filmmakers I think who would have done a very good job as well. But I have to say, working with Ken on this was a great pleasure, and I think he got fantastic performances. I think what's greatly underestimated too is how he finds people. We do the casting together, but I think he's got great instinct for people. Dave Jones, who we're delighted with. Dave's a stand-up comic who'd never acted before. Hayley, who I think is a really brilliant actress of tremendous subtlety and intelligence. She's a really, really bright woman. I think she was very, very special. And what was very good too was Newcastle as a city. It's a working-class city, shipbuilding. You know, and there's a kind of an energy to these places, and you kind of live off the city, because all these people in the food banks were real people in the food banks, the people in the street are real people. You know, a lot of the lawyer who acts for Daniel Lend is a real lawyer. You know, so you live off the city, and I think Newcastle was a great place to shoot in. Yeah. So, I mean, I think few people would have taken those radical decisions that Ken would have done in the implementation of the story. But the great thing is we do that together. You know, I'm there for the shoot, and we talk, and we share look at the locations together, look at the casting together, and you just try to be a supporting help to, because it's very demanding. And Ken, although he's got great energy, when we made the film, he was 79, you know, so now he's 80, so.
Okay, so that was Paul Laverty there. Right, let's go on to Best Actor.
Yeah.
One of the major awards of the evening. And the nominees for this were Rolf Lassgaard for A Man Called Ove, Hugh Grant for Florence Foster Jenkins, Dave Johns for I, Daniel Blake, Burgart Klausner for The People vs. Fritz Bauer, Peter Simonischek for Tony Erdmann, and Javier Camara for Truman. Here's who I predicted.
Actor for Sam is Peter Simonischek for Tony Erdmann.
An actor for Jake is Dave Johns for I, Daniel Blake.
Yeah.
Okay. What made you go for Dave Johns?
I thought people would connect with the fact that he's a non-actor made a really different performance, I think, because I can't imagine Dave Johns being very much of a diva on set. I imagine like he really gets just stuck into the task at hand.
Yeah.
And because he doesn't have that experience, there's an innocence to Daniel Blake, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely.
And that fish out of water as well that he becomes, having to deal with new technology and the new way of the working world. And perhaps I think something from Dave Johns' working career may have translated into that as well. And I think it's quite a quiet performance, but at moments it's very intense and it's very frustrating to watch, and I think people feel a personal connection to him as a character. Like he could be someone that you know very easily, and a lot of that is down to John's performance. That's why I've gone for Dave Johns. And why have you gone for Simon Oeschek?
Well, I think because this is a character that could have gone a complete different direction. So Peter Simon Oeschek plays the father, Antonio Edmund, who has gone to surprise visit his daughter, and he's realised that she's taking life way too seriously now. She's obsessed with her job. She's quite lonely. Everything is about making other people happy rather than herself, and is career orientated. So he kind of begins to play these pranks on her. And he could have been, with no offence at all, but he could have been this kind of Robin Williams type character, this really over-the-top clown figure. But he's actually really a really sympathetic character who's just every time he's on screen, you feel like you really know him. And you feel like he is really fatherly in a really good way. And I think he pulled that off very well. And the winner of this award was Peter Simon Oeschek.
Oh, so that makes it 2-2. In the battle, yeah,
the battle
For the sausage.
Absolutely. Okay, next award then was for Best Actress. Who did you go for?
I feel like we might have gone for the same one on this.
I think we have.
Yeah.
So we both went for Isabelle Huppert.
We certainly did. Yeah.
For Elle, we watched this the other night for the first time. It's an extraordinary film.
It really is, and it is. She is key to it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Some bizarre links to things to come,
yeah,
in terms of her character and the plot of the film. But she is a very successful woman who is raped. And then the film, I don't want to say any more about it because I think you have to go knowing very little about this film.
Yeah.
Because it really plays on what you expect from a rape revenge film.
Yeah, it has been touted as a rape revenge comedy, but I think even that is trying to pigeonhole it too much because it's not necessarily about revenge and it's not necessarily a comedy either.
No, it's a really bizarre film in many ways. Tonally, it's completely... You have no idea where it's going at all.
Yeah.
But I really rate it highly for that. And Isabelle Huppert completely is the centre of this film and it wouldn't have worked without her.
No.
So I think... Yeah, she probably should have won.
Yeah, it is
for us anyway.
Yeah, in terms of complex characters, this has so many things to be thinking about all at once. Even as an audience member, just trying to grasp who this person actually is and what they want is a task in itself. And so, actually trying to become that person and understand their actions and thoughts is something I couldn't comprehend.
Yeah.
And she just looks like she just slips into it.
From the beginning to end, you never know what else Michelle's thinking, Isabelle Huppert's character. And when she does things, you have no idea why she's done that.
Mm.
Even when the credits are rolling,
yeah,
I'm still left in the dark.
Yeah.
But that's the power of a performance, I think.
Yeah. And I think with awards sometimes, we've seen it a number of times with the Oscars, people might give awards not necessarily for the film they're talking about, they're just using that film as the poster for it.
Kind of like a body of work. Like when Scorsese won for The Departed, that's the famous example. Or even for Leonardo DiCaprio, it was his turn.
Yeah.
But I think maybe just the EFAs don't work like that, perhaps. Mm. It's a bit more genuine, I don't know.
Yeah, because for me, her performances this year in Things to Come and Elle just kind of combined, and it's a real powerhouse year for her.
So the other nominees for European Actress were Isabelle Huppert for Elle, Sandra Hüller for Tony Erdmann, Trin Dearholm for The Commune, Valeria Bruni Tedeschi for Like Crazy, and really interestingly, Emma Suarez and Adriana Uchart for Julieta.
Yeah.
So two actresses, because they both played the same character, one in the past, one in the present, but they're both nominated for the same film, which I think is a really nice way of doing that.
Yeah, I think this is a really strong category.
Yeah, definitely.
This, although we have both gone for the same thing, it could quite easily be any of them going into it. It was very hard to predict. There was no one jumping out. And we got it wrong.
We got it wrong because the winner was Sandra Hüller for her own Tony Erdmann, which isn't a bad thing at all because she has perhaps the hardest role in the film.
Definitely.
Because Peter Simon Oeschek has the character. He is the title lead. He's the one that the audience sides with, the one the audience likes. She has to be the cold-hearted daughter,
yeah,
and still, but she still remains a sympathetic character, I think.
Yeah, you don't dislike her.
No, not at all.
And although we like her father and we side with him, we also get that frustration when you're trying to do a job and someone is trying to tell you to take it less seriously.
Yeah.
That is a tough thing to deal with. And although, like, you might understand that at some level, that intrusion just feels so irritating.
Yeah.
And you do get that from her, but without, she doesn't lash out. She's not sort of some grown up adolescent that's just having a tantrum against her father. And I think you've got that balance in her performance between what she knows, what she doesn't want to admit to herself as well.
Absolutely. So the next award of the evening was the Lifetime Achievement Award, and that went to Jean-Claude Carrière, who's the writer on things like Cyrano de Bergerac, Unbearable Lightness of Being, Valmont, and many other films. So well deserved for that. Should we move on to Best Director?
Yep.
So the nominees for Best Director were Paul Verhoeven for Elle, Christian Mungui for Graduation, Ken Loach for I, Daniel Blake, Pedro Almodovar for Julieta, and Maren Arda for Tony Erdmann. Again, really strong nominations there.
Yeah.
I think the Paul Verhoeven has done something he's never done before in Elle. It doesn't feel like a Paul Verhoeven film. And then Ken Loach coming out of retirement to really... to sort of take over everything for the past few months. Everyone's been talking about Daniel Blake's great achievement. Almodovar, after I'm So Excited, which wasn't his best film, I think he would even agree to that, and audiences didn't quite take to it. He's come back with a really powerful drama about women, which is what he does best, and I think that should not go unrewarded. And Christian Mungui, on our London Film Festival special, Kate Kane really loved Graduation. I'm sure we'll be talking about that very soon. And then Maren Arda for Tony Erdmann, which we've talked about many times tonight. Again, a real great achievement there.
Yeah, I think with the people nominated here, you've got the with Christian Mungui and with Maren Arda, you've got something different.
Mm.
Whereas the other three are like, these are people still at the top of their game,
yeah,
but they're still doing what they do and they're doing it to the best they can.
Absolutely, yeah. So a celebration of old and new, which is what Wroclaw is as well,
yep,
which we were saying earlier.
That's really good, mate.
That's really good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You glad poet. I thought of that.
Yeah, you poet.
My pick for this one was...
Ken Loach.
So Kenneth of Loach.
Yeah. Papa Loach.
Papa Loach. I thought there'd be more love for I, Daniel Blake last night.
Yeah.
Because I thought... We'll talk about it later, but we'll get on to that.
My pick for director was...
Maren Arda.
Maren Arda.
Who was the winner. So, well done on your win.
Thank you. So, I'm currently leading the sausage campaign.
You're leading the sausage campaign. Maren Arda, I think, as we said with the actress category, if any of these won, it would be deserving. But what she's done here maybe has just captured people in a different way.
Yeah, I think... Because, as we mentioned, they are the old guard, the other directors in there. And it, I don't want to say we've seen things before, but it's like Pedro Almodovar makes Almodovari films.
Yeah, and that's what Julieta is.
Yeah.
Unapologetically, a very Almodovar-esque film. Yeah. The same with I, Daniel Blake.
I, Daniel Blake is a very intense Ken Loach.
It's pure Loach.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's like, this is...
Concentrated Loach.
That's exactly it. These are things that perhaps he might talk about in the allegory of other films or in the subplot of other films. They are the plot here. And so these are the things that Ken Loach directly is addressing. But it's very much a Loachian film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas we don't know, Maren Arda
or Tony Arda.
Yeah, it's very much an unknown quantity. So it came as such a surprise and such a breath of fresh air for so many people.
Yeah, and there's a kind of purity to that as well, that this film exists on its own terms. It's its own thing.
Yeah.
It's not based on anything particularly. It doesn't have a auteur behind the camera, maybe. It's completely its own thing, and I think that's what people really want to.
Yeah.
And it feels very genuine, completely 100% genuine. Shall we go to Best Film then? The final award of the evening.
Yep.
The nominations were L, I, Daniel Blake, Julieta, Room, and Tony Erdmann. So yeah, a lot of those we talked about before. They've been up for quite a few awards this evening. Room, I think, is the most surprising, simply because it doesn't feel like a European film.
Yeah,
it gets in because it had it's co-produced by Irish production company. I loved Room, and that was, I think that was the first ever podcast, wasn't it, Room?
It certainly was, and that is almost a year ago.
So that's nice to see it still being talked about there. And Brie Larson obviously won the Oscar for Best Actress last year.
Yeah, we had a brief conversation, which I think we will be putting into a blog post, with Lenny Abramson, the director of Room, who said that he had effectively kind of put Room away. We had the Oscars and all the awards after that, and he had started development on new projects. And Room, the road of Room as a film for him had almost stopped. And then because the European Film Awards is not campaigned, you don't do a big Oscar campaign.
Yeah, it's a surprise.
Yeah. And so he said this was just a really lovely surprise for the end of the year for him to almost, like, give it a proper farewell, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And should we do our predictions?
Yeah.
I can already see yours.
You've gone for Best Film, I, Daniel Blake. I've gone for Best Film, Tony Erdmann.
Which one? Tony Erdmann absolutely swept the board, and it got to a point in the evening where I just sort of turned to you and I said, all my predictions are wrong. The reason I've put I, Daniel Blake for this and Ken Loach for Best Director and Paul Laverty for Best Screenwriter is I thought two key reasons. One is that I thought there'd be more of a crossover with the Cannes jury and the European Film Academy. I thought there'd just be a common way of thinking there. And also, I don't know, I just thought 2016 this year, it's been a very year for political debate, and this was the most politically inclined film there. I thought that because it's so topical and so relevant, and Europe's really taking it, and they really love Ken Loach in Europe over here, I thought this would get it. But it didn't, it went to Tony Erdmann. And I think that's probably because it's been such a turbulent year. People want personal, light-hearted comedy drama.
I'm not sure if Tony Erdmann really is light-hearted. I think there is a lot of depth to it.
There's definitely depth, but I think I'd still call it light-hearted depth. It's definitely, the issues it's tackling are they're not worldwide, they're not affecting, you know, a huge group of people.
Yeah, it's not a global comment film, and I think it's just trying to introduce the idea of being lighthearted into an extremely stressful world.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need in films sometimes. But it's not an out and out comedy. It does make you think about real things and the way that you approach life.
So do you think this is a good sign for going forward to the other award ceremonies for Tony Erdmann?
Yeah, I think Tony Erdmann really is got to be the front runner for any foreign language film awards coming up. We've got, it'll be the Golden Globes soon enough. And then we've got Oscars and BAFTAs.
Yeah,
The way that this has swept the board and the way that this has swept the board and the cult status that it immediately picked up after Cannes, everyone's talking about it because it was such an anomaly. Everyone was saying, have you seen that 3-hour-long German comedy? And you say that one sentence and suddenly everyone thinks, I have to see that.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds so different. And the fact that it's not just, people aren't just watching it because it's different as well. They're watching it because it is a very touching, intimate film that manages to be a massive achievement in terms of its creativity as well. That it feels completely different, but it feels important as well.
Yeah, so a very good night all in all for Tony Erdmann.
Writer, actor, actress, director, best film?
Yeah.
And it's the first film to win best film at these awards, directed by a woman.
Yeah, it won every single award it was nominated for.
Yeah.
So that's a real achievement in itself. So we're going to end the show now just by going over our wild cards. So these were the things that we thought might happen in the evening. Did yours happen?
My wild card did not happen. Oh.
Neither did mine.
Oh.
Mine was, I thought some, because there's a scene in Tony Erdmann where there's a lot of naked people and then someone turns up dressed as a giant fluffy thing.
Right.
And I thought that would happen on stage as some sort of sketch.
The fluffy thing would come out.
Someone would turn up on stage as that giant fluffy thing.
Yeah.
What was yours? Again. Sadly, that didn't happen.
My wild card was Ken Loach announces retirement again.
Okay. If he won.
Yeah.
Sort of. Okay, no, I'm definitely retired.
Yeah. But that would have only happened. Potentially it could happen, but I thought if Ken Loach comes on stage for something... Yeah. I think Daniel Blake is a nice bookend to his career, sort of ending on that powerful statement that so many of his films have had. But alas, I don't know why I did it really, because I didn't actually predict that, anything that would involve Ken Loach going on stage. So I shot myself in the foot there.
Okay, so that's the end of our European Film Awards special. We want to thank Curzon Home Cinema once again for asking us to come out here. We had a great time with it.
Yeah,
really nice to see European film being recognised in the way that it has been over here.
Yeah, and do check out the Curzon Home Cinema European Film Awards collection, because that has got so much on it that we've spoken about today. We've got Fire at Sea, The Commune, United States of Love, Mustang, Love is All You Need, the Pierce Brosnan film. You've got films nominated for the People's Choice Award, like The Brand New Testament. You've got films from last year's awards, Mustang, A Pigeon Sat on a Branch, Reflecting on Existence, 45 Years, Goodnight Mummy, The Duke of Burgundy, Ida, Mr. Turner, 2 Days, 1 Night, The Tribe, Locke. It's a massive collection, and it really gives you an idea of how many incredible films are rewarded at this event.
Yeah, absolutely. And keep listening to the podcast every week, so every Friday, because in a few weeks or months' time, we will be talking about Elle. We will be talking about Tony Erdmann when they get their UK releases, so keep an eye out for that. And look back at our older podcasts and hear what we thought about I, Daniel Blake, Julieta, Room, Fire at Sea, amongst many others that were rewarded for their artistic achievements last night. So that's goodbye from me.
Yep, and it's goodbye from me. I think someone's getting a Thuringian sausage for lunch.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.